Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Yud Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The Gemara, four lines from the top of Daf Yudches, continues to relate to the issue of the checking of the Shechita knife, the knife used for slaughtering. Omar Rav Huna, Hai Tabcha Delo Sor Sakino Kami Chocham, a Shoychet, someone who is slaughtering the meat, who did not show the slaughtering knife to a Rav, to a Talmud Chacham, Mishamtinon Lei, he is to be excommunicated. The Rava Omar, Ma'avrinon Lei, Rava says he is to be removed from his position of Shoychet, U Machrezinon Abisre de Trefahi, and an announcement is to be made concerning the meat that he has slaughtered as being trefa, being unacceptable. So far, we've seen Rav Huna and Rava. Rav Huna mentioning that if he doesn't show his knife, he is excommunicated, and Rava saying he is removed from his position, and the meat that he has slaughtered is announced to be trefa. The Gemara says that there is no machlokas between Rav Huna and Rava, even though they seem to be presenting different approaches to someone who does not show the knife to the Chacham. V'lo pligi. Kan b'shenimtso sakino yofe. Rav Huna, who mentioned he's excommunicated, that is a case where the knife that he uses turns out to be fine, to be smooth, to be notch free. Then we simply impose a cherem, but that does not mean that he's removed from his position. Kan, Rava, who said that he's actually removed from his position, that he shall, and the result of that, he will never be able to sell meat again. B'shaloi nimseis sakino yofe. Ravina Omar, hecho delo nimseis sakino yofe. Memasmes lei beparsa da filu loive kechovim nami lo mizdavein. If the meat that he has slaughtered has been found to be no good, we're not going to simply announce that the meat is trefa. Trefa means unkosher meat, where he could then have sold it to a Gentile who is allowed to eat trefa. Ravina goes a step further and says we will mash his meat into cow dung. Parsa is refuse or feces. And as a result of that, he won't be able to sell it even to a Gentile. You'll notice with our markings, we had a little one and two. These correspond to two approaches to a situation when the knife that he was using was found to be with a notch in it. We now have an incident. Hahu tabcho delo sor sakino kame derava bar chinina. There was an incident where a fellow was shechting, and he didn't show his knife to the local scholar, Rava bar chinina. Shamte vi avrei. The Achriz Abisre de Trefa he. He was excommunicated, which is reminiscent of what Rav Huna mentioned before. He was removed from his position, and an announcement concerning his meat was issued that it is Trefa. Now, we should take a look at the Rashi immediately. Shamte v'Avrei. Rashi says, De Kosovar ki Omar Rova Mavrinon Lei. when Rava said he is removed from office, Afilu Ninse Sakino Yofe Ka'omar. So this is the a havamina, if you will, or a thought that the idea of removing someone from office is even when it's Nimse Sakino Yofe. You'll notice with our markings, even though when you're learning the Gemara initially, it's a little hard to appreciate the lettering that we had, but you'll notice here there was a little bays. A few lines up, there was a little aleph. That little aleph was positioned over the comment B'shelo Nimse Sakino Yofe, which gave the impression that the din of Rava is only when it's not Nimse Yofe. Here, thanks to Rashi's explanation, we understand that this is a second approach, namely that Rava's din is not limited to Lo Nimse Sakin Yofe, but even if it's Nimse Sakin Yofe, there is this removal from office. Hence, we have a little bays indicating two approaches to the din of removal from office. The story, we should have noted, is accompanied here by a long marking. You can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, the line opposite which the story began, we have the word Maisa written in with a descending vertical dashed line. This indicates the length of this particular story or incident. So we're in the middle of this incident where Taboch, Shoichet, did not show his knife to the local rabbi, and the individual was put into Cherem, was excommunicated, removed from office, with an announcement that the meat that he has slaughtered is Trefa. Iklu Marzutra v'Rav Ashi Legabe. Marzutra and Rav Ashi visited with Rava Bar Chinina. Omar Luhu, Rava Bar Chinina told them, Le'ainu Rabbonan Bemilse, check out the situation with this Taboch. The Tolu Bay Tifli, he is a father that has little children that are dependent on him. And being that he was removed from office, he has no income. And the little children, the kids, are going to suffer. Bodko Rav Ashi Lisakine Venimse Syofe the Akshare. Rav Ashi checked out his knife, and it turned out that the knife was notch free, it was smooth. And Rav Ashi declared that he is kosher, that he can serve as a shoychet. And Rashi points out at this point that that which Rava said, one is removed from office, is only if nimse sakino she'eno yofe, where it's found to be with a notch. So this approach of the achshere really reverts back to the little aleph that we had above. So this isn't a new approach, it's simply reverting back to the first approach to Rava. Hence Rav Ashi felt he can be restored to office. Omar le Marzutra velo lechush mar lesabo. Marzutra, who accompanied Rav Ashi, says, are you not concerned about the honor that was due to Rava Bar Chinina? And this fellow disrespected Rava Bar Chinina by not showing him the Shoichet knife. Amalei, Rav Ashi says, if you're asking about the issue of my honor, the required honor to Rava Bar Chinina, but he's the one that sent me on this mission to check things out and to rectify matters if necessary. Amalei, Rav Ashi says, Shlichuse ko avdinon, I am doing his mission. I was sent on his orders. Rashi says something interesting here. He says, "Shliuchusei ko abdinon, sherei tzivonu limtso loz chus." Rava Bar Chinina wanted us to attempt to find some type of merit. V'achshav shemotzi, now that we found that his knife was smooth, which is serves as a merit in his favor, ein onu tzrichim lachzor limolech bo, we don't have to go back and consult with Rava Bar Chinina again. As you can see in the markings, we have a slash mark. That indicates that that which follows is a new idea. We are continuing now with issues concerning the we'll call knife in quotation marks, the knife used for shechita. The knife is that element, that vessel or entity that's used for slicing the throat of the animal being slaughtered. So here we will talk, we have a nosei, a topic heading in the outside margin that we've under which we've written shechita b'shein ubitziporin, slaughtering with by using the tooth or the nail of an animal. Omar Rabo bar Rav Huna, shein tlusha, a tooth that has been removed from the jaw. We should say maybe more accurately, according to Rashi's explanation, we're talking about a jaw that was removed from either a person or an animal with a tooth in it. So there are pictures, by the way, in the Sichas Chulin Book of Illustrations, a book that we have been encouraging our listeners along the way to acquire. This sefer, this book, will be extremely valuable as we go on in sugyas dealing with shechita and treifas. So in the meantime, if you have the Book of Illustrations, you can find the appropriate illustration to appreciate this a little more. We're talking about a jaw with a tooth in it. So, and he's holding the jaw, as I will say, a handle, so to speak, using the tooth as the knife. Vitziporen tlusha, a nail of an animal that has been removed. Mutar lishchot bo lechatchila. These are acceptable as a first choice means of knife. The Gemara asks, v'anan tanan, but have we not learned in a Mishnah already, chutz mimagol kotzir, v'megeira, v'ashinayim, v'atziporen, etnei shein chomkin? The Mishnah mentions a number of items that are not acceptable to be used. The magol kotzir, megeira, these are knives with teeth in them, with the serrated knives, non-smooth sakinim, and you have two more elements that have been dashed, underlined, because they are relevant to our immediate discussion: teeth and nails. They are not acceptable because they don't do a slicing action, but rather a choking, literally a choking action, whereby the simonim are eventually, they're ripped out as opposed to cut. So here we have a source not approving of shinayim and siporen, where just a couple lines up, where we underline shein and siporen, you saw that they were acceptable. The Gemara answers, shein ashein lo kashya, regarding the teeth, there is no contradiction, ha bechado ha betarti. If it's a singular tooth that's being used or coming into contact with the neck, that's mutter, that's allowed. However, if it's two, tarti, two teeth that are being used, what happens is there's a gap between the teeth, and the neck organ, then after the cutting is done by the first tooth, the neck organs then slip into the gap between the teeth and can be ripped out at that point. In other words, you're no longer engaged in a slicing action. Tziporna tziporin lo kashya, the issue of the nail is also no contradiction. It depends. Ha betlusha, ha bemechuberes. If it's disconnected, then it's acceptable. However, if it's attached to the animal, if you take, let's say, an animal's leg and use its nail while it's attached to the animal for slaughtering, that is not acceptable. And that comes under the prohibition of ein shochatin b'mechubar, not to use mechubar, things that are attached to where they grow from, as shechita knives. The Mishnah, hashochet b'magol kotzir b'derech halichosa, if one uses a magol kotzir, and this is once again an item that is illustrated in the book of illustrations, the Sichas Chulin, and we've also provided a crude illustration of a magol kotzir on the inside margin. So if one uses this as a knife for slaughtering, but pulls it only in one direction, So Beis Shammai poison Beis Hillel machshirin. Beis Hillel says that it still is an acceptable shechita, even though you can see that the teeth, that it has teeth to it. It's not a perfectly smooth edge, but yet Beis Hillel says it's acceptable. V'im hichliku shinah, if its teeth are smoothed out, meaning they're basically eliminated by through a knife sharpening procedure. Hare hu kisakin, then it takes on the status of a full fledged, regular, acceptable knife. Omar Rav Chiya bar Av Abba Omar Rabbi Yochanan Av Kishihshiru Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel, who said that the slaughtering using the Magal Kotsir in one direction is, they use the term Machshirin, their Hechshir, their allowance, is Lo Hechshir El Latara Midei Nevela. It's considered a slaughtering only with regard to the result of it not being a nevela. A nevela is an animal that basically dropped dead, an animal that did not receive a proper shechita, and it conveys ritual impurity, tumas nevela. What we are saying here is that if it went through a slaughtering with a magal kotsir, it's not considered a nevela. We should have pointed out, based on Rashi on the Mishnah, the unique feature of the Magal Kotsir, even though it seems to have teeth, its teeth are very bent over so that there is no falling of the simen into a cavity or a notch by virtue of the way that the teeth of the Magal Kotsir are positioned on the knife. As you can see from the illustration, the teeth are very much bent over, creating an almost smooth surface with regard to the shechita, provided, of course, that you move the knife only in one direction. So the Rav Chiya bar Abba halacha that we're studying right now says that the hechsher, the allowance that Beis Hillel accords to a shechita with Magal Kotsir, is only insofar as preventing Tumas Nevela from setting in. Aval be'achilo asura, but we are not going to allow the actual consumption of meat slaughtered with a Magal Kotsir, even though it's moved or sliced in one direction. And the explanation for this is that we make a gezeira, a restriction, whereby we restrict even the one directional movement in anticipation of someone coming to do the standard back and forth movement, which would be a truly ruined shechita. And that would really be a nevela. So even where you did a one-directional movement, nevertheless, we're not going to go so far as to allow the eating of the meat. Omar Rav Ashi, Daiko Nami. Rav Ashi says that this can be seen through careful reading, Daiko Nami, by being medayik in the reading of the Mishnah, that Beis Hillel was in fact alluding to this distinction between tumas nevela and eating, namely not allowing actual eating. Dikotoni, the Mishnah said, and you can see we have a frame around these words. These are this is a quote from the Mishnah. Beis Shammai poislin uBeis Hillel machshirin. The expression Beis Hillel used was machshirin v'lo kotoni. It doesn't say in this source Beis Shammai oisrin uBeis Hillel matirin. That you don't see. Had it used the expression Beis Hillel matirin, that they allow, that would have conveyed the idea that you can actually eat the meat. But it says machshirin, which indicates some type of allowance, but of a lesser nature. That's Rav Ashi's point. The Gemara now asks on Rav Ashi and says, Uletameich, according to you who are trying to prove a point from the language, listening, then it should have said Beis Hillel metamenu Beis Hillel metarin, the more appropriate language to convey the idea that there is no tumas nevela would have been for it to say Beis Hillel metaharin tahara, and Beis Hillel Beis Shammai would say metamin lashon of tuma, but it doesn't say that. Ela poislin umachshirin, the expression poislin umachshirin ve'oisrin umatirin chado milsehi. since Beis Hillel did not use the Lashon Mitarin, it's then, according to the rejection of the Gemara feels it's obvious that Beis Hillel was not limiting himself to the issue of Nevela, Tumas Nevela, but rather Beis Hillel, when they said Machshirin, is really in essentially saying Matirin, going all the way. So these expressions, Poisun Machshirin and Oisun Matirin, are one. The Chado Milsi means they convey the same sense. And if you're going to focus on the language, then we can't say that we have support for the teaching of Rav Chiya Bar Abba, who opened up this piece of Gemara. There would be no support from the source. As far as the halacha is concerned, the fact that you don't find a support for it from a Tanaic source does not necessarily mean that the point that he made is rejected. All it's saying is that we don't have a foundation from the Mishnah for what he's saying. Hashochet, the Mishnah, Hashochet mitoch atabas. We should point out before we learn this Mishnah, we have a topic heading, and let's read the topic heading. We've entitled this sugya using the word hagroma. Sheshochet shaloi b'mokom shchita. The term hagroma is a term used for the knife veering out of the proper spot for cutting on the animal's neck. So it has to do with slaughtering outside the acceptable area. We will see a machlokis rabbonin and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda b'mi sheshochat ruba b'soich tabas hagadola, where the slaughtering started in the large ring. The rings we're referring to here are illustrated quite extensively in the Sichas Chulin Book of Illustrations. When you're looking at the trachea, the windpipe is a tube that's characterized by a cartilaginous substance that surrounds it in a, we can call it in a maybe accordion style membrane. It has this accordion look to it. In other words, rings upon rings, rings after successive rings that surround the trachea. The trachea being described later in the Gemara and Rashi as essentially a membrane that runs on the inside of this tube made of cartilaginous rings. The introduction that we have written on the side of the Gemara describes the uppermost ring, which is called the Tabas Hagadola. He is described here as starting the shchita, the slicing, while slicing into this large uppermost ring. The siyem lemalo michutzala. But as he was finishing the shchita, as the knife was coming to the end of the tabas hagdola, it took an angle and veered outside of it. It veered upwards. Upwards meaning more toward the head. So that we can say rove, the majority of the slicing, of the cutting, was in the tabas hagdola, but the final minority of cutting, the miut to acharoin, the final miut, was done with a knife veering outside and slicing above the tabas hagadola. There are a number of neck organs of trachea or neck organs that will be referred to in the Gemara that exist above the tabas hagadola. Some of the terms that we will see are kova and shipui kova. This is more cartilaginous substance that's above the uppermost ring. And then there is also something called the chiti, some type of tissue matter, maybe there are glands that exist also in this upper region. We will see a number of different opinions as we go on in the Gemara. Even though the Mishnah reflects two opinions, there are more opinions regarding what is the uppermost limit allowed for shchita. There are, of course, limits or guidelines, boundaries would be the best term, boundaries for the area, that boundaries that define the area appropriate for shita, both dealing with the trachea, the kona, and the veshet, the esophagus. So as we turn to the Mishnah, Hashochit mitoch hatabas, one who is slaughtering the animal in the tabas, in this case we're talking about the tabas hagedoyla, the shir bo amaloi hachut al pene kula, and the slicing started and ended within the tabas, so that if you were to view the tabas now as it's sliced, as long as you leave a complete ring on either side of the knife, a complete ring, having cut the tabas hagdola into half, or if you leave even a very thin amount above the knife, so that the knife is surrounded on both sides by tabas hagdola material, that's the shchitaso kshera. We have to emphasize, according to this first opinion, when is the shchita okay, provided the knife remains after the slicing, remains within the tabas hagdola. Hence it says al pnei kula. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, malo chut al pnei ruba. As far as he is concerned, he has a more lenient opinion, where he would allow a knife to have veered out and up above the tabas hagdola, provided the first amount that was cut, the initial majority was within the tabas hagdola. If at the end it veers upward, continuing to cut outside of the tabas hagdola, it would still be okay. That's according to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Ushmuel Dami Chavayu Halacha Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Ushmuel tell us that the halacha is to be like Rabbi Yosi. The Af Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda Lo Omar Ela B'tabas Hagdola. And even Rabbi Yosi, when he spoke about an allowance of rove, his halacha was limited to this ring, this tabas hagdola ring, hoyu umakefes es kol hakona, since it surrounds the entire trachea. The trachea, as we said before, is really the soft tissue matter that's found within the rings. The rings surround the kona. And as far as the tabas hagdola is concerned, it's the only one of the rings that completely surrounds the tabas hagdola. This, of course, is illustrated in the Sichas Chulin. It's very important to take advantage of the pictures that accompany the Gemara. So, in describing the tabas hagdola, Rav and Shmuel are pointing out that his Rav Yosef's halacha of allowing a rove as opposed to a complete rove, being a majority, as being sufficient, majority that is sufficient for creating a kosher shechita, that's only if you're dealing with that uppermost ring, the tabas hagadola ring. And that's because it completely surrounds the kona. And we're interested not in cutting cartilage, we're interested in cutting the kona. So that if you have the ring surrounding the kona completely, if you cut the majority of the ring, you are simultaneously cutting the majority of the kona. Avol bishar taboy slow. But as far as the other rings, the lower rings that continue further, continue down or further toward the lungs, those rings, if one cuts rove of the ring, he has not necessarily cut rove the majority of the kone. And that is because those other rings do not completely surround the kone. The rings actually remind us of many rings that people wear, where sometimes the ring can be adjusted so that the ring itself is not a 360 degree circle. There's the ring is made of bent material, when we're talking about rings people wear on their fingers, and it's not a complete circle, allowing one to adjust the size of the ring so that there's a point at which we call it the ends of the ring are not attached. And in the case of the anatomy, the kone itself grows into that area that's open as far as the ring is concerned. So the cutting of the other rings, the other cartilaginous rings, if you cut rove of that, that does not ensure that you've cut rove of the kone that's contained within the ring, because of the fact that these other rings don't completely surround the trachea. The Gemara now asks on this last point, Ubishar Taboz Lo. We also have a long question marking accompanying this, indicating that the question continues till the fourth line from the top of Amud Beis. This question essentially takes in a Tanaic source which would seem to indicate otherwise. So it says here, V'hotanya, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Huda Omer, Hashoche Bishar Taboz. One who slaughters in the other rings, even though they don't completely surround the kone, since they, the other rings, surround the majority of the kone, that makes them a proper mokom hashchita. So once the fact that they surround the majority of the kone, we've established that they are a mokom hashchita, then it's enough if I cut a majority of sha'ar tabos. In other words, if my cutting is a cutting of a majority of any of the other tabos, it would also be a good shchita. As you can see, as far as the markings are concerned, there's a bracketed section, and the reason for these, we've written on the inside margin, Tam Lesograim, for an appreciation of the reason for these brackets, Ayin Rashi Dibor Masul Mugremes. Rashi himself is very sensitive to this next phrase, Shemazbir, Rashi explains, De Elu Divrei Horabonon, Vavi Milsa Ba'anpe Nafsha. This is not a continuation of Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Huda, but rather it's the Shita of the Rabbonon. And we'll also see another opinion in this bracketed section. But as far as our sukkah is concerned, we're focusing not on this bracketed section, but on the fact that it says that one who shechts bishar hatabos, his shchita is considered good. Rashi at the top line says, Hashochi bishar hatabos kol hakona oy roiv chaloloi. The bracketed section we will now read, Umugremes Psula. Mugremes is the idea of shechting outside the Mokom Hashchita. Namely, even if Rove, even if the majority of the cutting is within the Tabas Hagdola, and the minority is above it, it will not be good. Now that is not Shitas Rabbi Yosi Buda, that's Shitas Rabbonan. Hayid Rabbi Hanino ben Antignus al Mugremes Shihi Kshera. Rabbi Hanino testifies a very lenient approach, where even if the entire cutting was above the Tabas HaGedola, it would be a kosher shchita. Rashi tells us that this opinion of Rabbi Hanino ben Antignus has an oral tradition concerning hagroma as being unacceptable. However, his definition is different than that which we've accepted till now, or seen till now. His definition is from above the shipui kova. The shipui kova, as we mentioned earlier, is part of an element, so tissue matter, cartilaginous matter, above the tabas gedola, that itself has a sloping section. And of course, everything we're saying depends on your familiarizing yourself with the illustrations that accompany this, but there's a sloping part of this, we'll call it organ, called kova. Only at above that point will there be a problem of hagroma. However, according to Rabbi Chanina, if you are further down on the trachea below the shipui kova, you're okay, even though you are completely above the tabas hagadola. At this point, though, we have to reiterate our question. We saw Rav and Shmuel telling us that shchita b'shar hatabos, according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, would not be acceptable. In other words, his din of allowing a rove of tabas to be cut, and that's said to be sufficient, that is limited, according to Rav and Shmuel, to the din, to the case of the tabas hagdola. But the cutting of shar hatabos and saying rove of them is sufficient, this is something that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda himself would not agree with. However, we see that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, in this Tanaic source, does allow shchita b'shar hatabos as well, seemingly that rove of shar hatabos would be sufficient. The Gemara answers, Omar Rav Yosef, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda tarti ko'omar. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda made 2 points. We should look in the Rashi immediately, and you can see we've added markings to the Rashi, little triangles with a 1 and 2 next to them. Rashi says, Tarti Omar, le'inyin chaticha sakona, as far as cutting of the trachea, islei ruba kikula, dekevon dechote haroiv behechshek shera. He holds that it's sufficient to do rove of the kona, that's enough. Le'inyin l'shav l'shar tabois moko im shchita, mishum hakofas horoiv, omar nami ruba kikula. And as far as establishing the other tabos as being considered a legitimate mokom, place for slaughtering, because of the fact that they surround most of the kana, he holds that ruba kikula applies to shar hatabos as well. Rav Yosef continues in the Gemara, Rav Ushmuel Savri Kavose Bechada Upligi Ole Bechada. Rav and Shmuel, on the other hand, agree with only one of the 2 points that he makes, namely that Chatichas Rov in the Mokom Hashchita is considered a complete cutting. In other words, a Rubo Kikulo is true if you're in a Mokom Hashchita. However, they disagree, Pligi Ole Bechada, they disagree with him in that which he, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, wanted to say that Shar HaTabos are considered Mokom HaShchita because of the fact that Shar HaTabos surround Rove of the Kona. This we, Rav and Shmuel, do not agree with. They do not view the Shar HaTabos as a Mokom HaShchita. So far, what have we said? We've said that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda made 2 points, and Rav and Shmuel accept only one of his 2 points. The Gemara, though, says that Rav and Shmuel weren't picking points of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. They were presenting Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. V'ha loy omar ko'amri. They weren't saying their own opinion. They were presenting his opinion. And as a result of this, how can you say that they picked only one of the 2 things that he said? They weren't coming to pick one of 2 things. They were coming to present him. The Gemara says no. In fact, Rav and Shmuel were picking one of 2 points that he made. Hochi ko'omar. This is what Rav and Shmuel were saying. Halocha k'moisei b'tabas hagedoyla. The halacha will follow his opinion with regard to tabas hagdola, namely that tabas hagdola rubo is sufficient, rov is sufficient, because it is a mokom hashchita. The ein halacha kamoisoi b'shar hatabos, and the halacha is not to follow him with regard to the other rings, and when they said Lo Omar, what they meaning to say, they're not coming to moderate him, but rather saying that that which he says is Ki'ilu Lo Omar, it's like he said nothing. In other words, saying what he did on that score regarding the other Tabos is of no value. Ki Solik Rabbi Zera Ochal Mugremes de Rav Ushmuel. When Rabbi Zera came to Eretz Yisrael, he ate from the, we'll call it the lenient opinion presented by Rav and Shmuel, namely that Shchita mitoch Shar HaTavos. What we can say is that the way the Gemara is looking at this is, well, actually we should be a little more accurate in our explanation. Not that Rav and Shmuel represented a lenient opinion, because in fact they did not. They rejected the Shchita b'Shar Tavos. However, Rabbi Zera ate from meat that was slaughtered mitoch Shar Tavos. In other words, that which Rav and Shmuel described as mugremis, mugremis being a slaughtering outside the Mokom HaShchita. They, Rav and Shmuel, had defined Shar HaTavos as being non-Mokom HaShchita. Yet, Rabbi Zera ate from a Shchita that took place Bishar HaTavos. Amri Lei, they asked Rabbi Zera, how is it that you are eating that which Rav and Shmuel would not have accepted? So they asked him, Lav me asrei de Rav and Shmuel at? Are you not from the place of Rav and Shmuel? In other words, are you not bound to the legal rulings of Rav and Shmuel, being that you come from their place? Omar Lahu, Rabbi Zera says, Man Omra, who quoted Rav and Shmuel? Yosef Bar Chia. Is he the one that quoted them? Yosef Bar Chia Mikule Alma Gomir. Rabbi Yosef Bar Chia, he learns Torah from many different sources. And it's possible that he, being that he learns from so many places, he didn't quote accurately the ones from whom he really learned this halacha. And therefore, it could be that Rav and Shmuel would agree with me that Shar HaTavos are a Mokom HaShchita. Shoma Rav Yosef, before going on in the Gemara, just point out to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, you see a nun that's encircled with a vertical descending dashed line. A point is going to be made now, and it lasts all of the lines that are opposite this vertical dashed line. Shoma Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef heard Rabbi Zera's description of him, Ikpid, and he was upset. Omar, Rav Yosef responded and said, Ano mikule almo gamirna. Do you think that I learn from just everybody? Ano me Rav Yehuda gamirna. My Torah comes from Rav Yehuda. And as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, Dafilu Sveki de Gavri Goris. Rav Yehuda, when he transmits Torah learning, he is very careful to cite even the doubts regarding who the author of a particular teaching is, as is going to be illustrated momentarily. The Omer of Yehuda. Now here we have a quote dealing with a topic that's totally unrelated to our halachas right now of Shchita, but it's brought in to show how careful Rav Yehuda is when he quotes from other authorities that he heard from, and I, Rav Yosef, learned from Rav Yehuda. So that to think that I simply messed up on the names is far-fetched when my source of Torah is from someone who is very careful with names. And here we have an illustration of Rav Yehuda's care. The Omer of Yehuda, Amar Rab Yirmiyo bar Abba, Safek Mishmei de Rav, Safek Mishmei de Shmuel, Shloisha Matirin es Abachor b'mokim she'ein mumche. This particular halacha has to deals with a firstborn male animal that ordinarily is given to a kohen, which is brought then as a sacrifice in the Beis Hamikdash. In the event that it has a blemish, it can be slaughtered outside the Beis Hamikdash. And that's what is meant by the term matirin es habechor. Generally speaking, blemishes are shown to a person who is expert in blemishes. In the absence of a mumche, three commoners are allowed to rule on what appears to be a blemish. As far as details are concerned, there is an entire masechta called Maseches Bechoros that deals with these halachas. However, for our purposes, you notice that Rav Yehuda, in quoting the halacha, he says that he heard it from Rav Yirmiya, and it's a suffix whether it was said in the name of Rav or of Shmuel. Someone who learns with that level of care and precision is someone that one can certainly rely on. That's Rav Yosef's response to what Rabbi Zera was mentioning his doubts about Rav Yosef's reliability. The Gemara now asks, regarding Rabbi Zera himself, being that Rav and Shmuel, who are from Bovel, restricted Shechita at Bishar HaTabos, it's of some concern to us that Rabbi Zera, who came from a place that restricted Shechita Bishar HaTabos and was in fact eating meat that was shechted in that fashion. For Rabbi Zera, the Gemara asks, Les Lay, does he not hold from the concept of Noisnin Olav Chumrei Hamokim Shiyotsa Misham V'Chumrei Hamokim Shehalach L'Sham? This is a concept that's appropriate to psak halacha, to legal rulings, whereby a person is bound by the restrictions of the place from which he came. In other words, if a person is traveling and he comes from one locale and visits another locale, and in the original locale, his hometown, his home base, they related to an area of halacha with restriction, and he then visits another area where that same issue is dealt with leniently. So even though he's visiting a place where the practice is lenient, he nevertheless is bound to observe the restrictions of the place from which he came. And likewise, in an opposite scenario, where he came from a place of leniency and is visiting a place of restriction, he is expected once again to abide by the restriction of the place that he is visiting. In our case, Rabbi Zera came from a place of restriction and seems to be behaving otherwise by eating shechita that took place Bishar HaTabos. Omar Abaye. Abaye responds to this issue, to, let's say, defend Rabbi Zera. He says, and noting, of course, that Abaye represents number one, a few lines later we will see number two by Rav Ashi. Omar Abaye, Hani Mili, the rule that was just taught, Mi Bovel Le Bovel, Ume Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. That's true when one is staying within a particular country, and he's traveling from one town to another, either in Bovel or from one town to another in Eretz Yisrael. Inami, another possibility is Eretz Yisrael or Bovel, where he is traveling from Eretz Yisrael to Bovel. Then the above rule will apply, that he has to observe the restrictions of the place he came from. In that case, he was coming from Eretz Yisrael to Bovel, even though in Bovel they may be observing a leniency. Avol, Mi Bovel le'Eretz Yisrael. However, one who's traveling from Bovel to Eretz Yisrael, like was the case with Rabbi Zera, then Kevon de Anan Kaifinon Lehu, since we here in Bovel, being that this is a Gemara Talmud Bavli, so the first person plural, when it says we, are referring to Bovel, since we are kaifinon lehu, we are subsidiary to Eretz Yisrael. And what is intended by the term subsidiary to Eretz Yisrael? So Rashi mentions, when it comes to establishing the calendar, or Kiddush HaChodesh, or Ibur Shana, or extending a year, issues concerning Kiddush HaChodesh, which has to do with accepting witnesses when defining when the new month begins, or calculations that are involved in adding a month to the Jewish calendar, those matters are settled in Eretz Yisrael. And another point is that only in Eretz Yisrael are matters that are under the realm of knas, which is in the general realm of financial obligations or tort law. Only in Eretz Yisrael do they don dine knosos, not in Bavel. So there's a certain superiority, if you will, that Eretz Yisrael has over Bavel. And therefore Abaye is pointing out, since Eretz Yisrael has this element of superiority, avdinon kavasaihu, we will follow their practice. Which means, even if you're going from Bavel, which may observe a restriction, but since we're going to an area of superiority, namely Eretz Yisrael, we're not bound by the restriction of the lesser location, Bavel. Rav Ashi has a different opinion on this matter. Afilu temo mi bovel Eretz Yisrael. Rav Ashi says that the rule we mentioned above of needing to observe the restrictions of the place of origin, that rule will apply to someone traveling from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. However, hani mili hecho didaito lachzor, that rule will apply if his intent is to return to Bavel. Therefore, he doesn't lose his Bavel identity, and if Bavel observed the restriction, even though he's visiting Eretz Yisrael, he's bound by the Bavel restriction. Rabbi Zeira ain daito lachzor have. Rabbi Zeira, on the other hand, was someone who did not intend to return to Bavel. Therefore, he had a right to abandon the restriction of Bavel, even though he came from there, being that he is planning to remain in Eretz Yisrael. Omar le Abaye le Rav Yosef, the whole Rabbonon de Osu mi Mechuza, we know of scholars that come from Mechuza, which is a place in Bavel. Let's read that again. V'ha'rabbonon de'osu mimechuza amri. They say, and these are Babylonian scholars that say, Mishmei de Rav Nachman, in the name of Rav Nachman, Mugremes Kshera. The Mugremes of Rav and Shmuel is acceptable. Even though Rav and Shmuel did not accept it, we hold it's acceptable. And here, you're talking about people that are from Bavel, in which we were just portraying Bavel as observing a restriction with regard to this. So how can these Rabbanan from Mechuza, who are from Bavel, say that we say that it is okay? Amale, so Rav Yosef says, Nara, Nara, Upashte. Literally, every river has its own course. But what this means is that even in Bavel, there are different practices. Rabbi Shimon ben Lokish, Achshir Bechuda de Koiva. For this, we highly recommend using the illustrations. Reish Lakish is saying that Shechita is allowed, Bechuda Shel Koiva, which is an area above the Tabas HaGdola. There is a Rashi that accompanies this Gemara, Bechuda de Koiva, Kemin Kova Yesh Lamalo Min HaKone. There is a type of hat that is above the kone, kekova al horosh, like a hat on one's head. V'einza oisa boser koton shenoifel al pi hakone lakiv zakoil. This is not a reference to the epiglottis, that when one is in the case of a human being, when he's speaking, it opens and closes or when one is eating, let's say, one is eating, so the epiglottis closes the trachea so that the food doesn't enter the trachea. We're not referring to that organ. Elokamin koiva mamish, it's rather more extraneous as far as the tubes are concerned. Kamin kova mamishu osui, it looks like a hat. Umamsi osu lamalo holo fukola, from the middle of this kova it slopes and narrows or tapers. Vinase chadud kamin kumus, and it becomes very very tapered or pointy like a quill. Shekorin helm, sounds like the word helmet. Vaoiso shipui nikra shipui kova, this tapering is called the shipui kova. Bechuda be'elyono shel kova begago, the tapering starts from a certain point at which it reaches a certain width or extreme width and then starts to taper. So Reish Lakish is allowing shchita bechuda shel kova at that point at which it starts to taper. Continuing in the Gemara, Kori Ole Rabbi Yochanan in relating to Reish Lakish's ruling, he says, Gisa, Gisa. Gisa meaning side, or in this case, you have gone too far directionally or boundary wise. Namely, even Rabbi Chanina, who allowed a shchita, we saw above, Rabbi Chanina was made that Mugremis is kosher, he wouldn't allow as far up as you are allowing. Rashi explains, three lines from the very bottom, Gisa Gisa, Hages Hages, Klomar Yoser Midai Hichsharta, you are allowing too much, too far up. The Ein Kosher, Afilu Rabbi Chanina Elomi Mokom Shechidudo Masrilalois, he allows only from the point, only up till the point where the this expansion, if you will, starts to rise. However, you are allowing at the point that it's completely risen. So you have to take note of this difference, and we tried to do with our markings in the Rashi, where earlier on the third line from the bottom we noted Bechuda be'el yoinoi shel kova. This is contrasted with the expression here Mimokom shechidudo maschil la'alois. It may be that we're dealing with fractions of an inch in difference, but nevertheless that's the way halacha is. It deals with the very fine differences. So that according to Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish is allowing too far toward the head. Continuing in the Gemara, Omar Rav Popi Mishmei Derava, Poga Bechiti Trefa. Chiti are a type of tissue matter or glands that are attached to the trachea. They are illustrated, so once again you are highly recommended to take advantage of the illustrations in the Sichas Chulin book in order to see what we are referring to when we use the term chiti. If you see the illustrations, you'll then be able to appreciate the relative position of these with regard to other organs we've spoken about. We've spoken about the Tabasa Gedola, above which we spoke about the Kova, we mentioned the Shipui Kova, and then even further forward you have the Chiti. The halacha we just heard in the name of Rav Popi quoting Rava says, Poga b'chiti trefa. The word Poga is now the subject of the Gemara's discussion. Ibaya laho. Poga v'noga bohen? Does poga mean he cut into them with his knife? Poga v'noga. Noga means literally touched, but that the knife touched and cut into the chiti. Dichti v'yifga bo v'yomos. You have in this posuk the term poga. Poga indicating contact, actual contact. Not just meeting up with, but actual contact
in.
Oh, Dilma, poga velonaga. Or does poga mean reaching something but not actual contact with? Where the Pasuk says that the angels met up with him. They met up with him, they came face to face, so to speak, but not actual contact. So the word poga itself is unclear. So in the meantime, Rav Papi quoted Rava saying poga b'chiti trefa, leaving us with some lack of clarity. In response to this, Itmar Omar Rav Papa Mishmei de Rava. In response, meaning the Gemara now brings in another quotation of Rava, and you can see we have a diamond around Mishmei de Rava to indicate the connection between these two quotes. Here it's Rav Papa as opposed to Rav Papi before. Rav Papa quotes Rava and says, "Shier b'chiti k'shera." That shier means leaving over. That would mean that one can actually cut into the chiti, leaving a part of the chiti above the knife. And even so, even though you've cut into the chiti, it's kosher. So that it may be pointed out that we saw above Rav Papi quoting Rava saying, "Poga b'chiti trefa." This version, this quote of Rava, is much more lenient. This is saying that even if you cut into the chiti, it's still kosher. Amar Rava Meimar Bar Mar Yonuka. Havo ko'imno kamei d'Rav Chiya brei d'Rav Avya. I was in the presence of Rav Chiya. V'amar li shier b'chiti k'shera, and he ruled like we just saw in the name of Rav Papa quoting Rava, that shir b'chiti is okay. Omar le Ravino the Ravashi. Omar li Rav Shamon Misovra. There are a number of names in this little piece right now. So Ravino reports to Ravashi that Rav Shamon told Ravino the following. Iklo Marzutra la'asrin. Marzutra came to our town, the Dorash, and he announced, promulgated, or he taught, shir b'chiti k'shera. And that's what we mean by poga v'noga. Mor bar Rav Ashi Omar poga b'chiti k'shera. Shir b'chiti trefa. So we have written above this that he is machmir because he's making a distinction between poga and noga. And that's what we've attempted to do with our markings. We call in Marv Rav Ashi's teaching, Aleph is poga b'chiti k'shera, that merely coming close to the chiti, coming right up to the chiti is okay. However, shir b'chiti trefa, that's a case where you would actually have cut into the chiti, that would be unacceptable. So he is more restrictive in his shita boundaries than Marzutra was. The Hilchasa, here the Gemara at the top of Yutes Amud Aleph rules, Mi Shipui Kova Ulamato Kshera, Fahainu Deshir Bechiti. Rashi at the top, The Hilchasa, Mi Shipui Kova Ulamato Kshera, Koidem Shiaskla Kovil Shapea Velalois Kshera, Misham Ulahalon Shrefa. From, if you cut before the kova starts to rise, it's okay. However, if you cut beyond the point, namely, you cut in the kova where it starts to rise, that is no good. V'hainu d'shir b'chiti, Rashi goes on, klomar, kemanda omar, shir b'chiti k'shera. In other words, the reference to shipui kova is paralleled or overlaid with regard to the shita concerning the chiti. As you can see from the illustrations, the chiti grow from within, from underneath the kova, so that you can refer to both elements, both organs at the same time, being that one simply covers the other. Rav Nachmon Achshir Mishipui Kova Ulamata. Rav Nachman said that from shipui kova, from a cutting in the kova, before it starts to rise, that's okay. Amar le Rav Chanan bar Rav Katino le Rav Nachman. Come on, your teaching is based on whom? Loi k'Rabbanan, the loi k'Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda. It's not like either the Rabbanan nor Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda. Rabbanan said that the uppermost level of Shechita must be contained within and completely within the Tabas HaGedola. Rav Yosi was a little more lenient, allowing rove of the Shechita in the Tabas HaGedola, even if you veered out a little bit at the end of your cutting. However, even Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda was not allowing an entire Shechita above the Tabas HaGedola, and you are. Amar Leh, so Rav Nachman responded and said, Ano lo chilik yadana v'lo bilik yadana. Ano shmaitzi yadana. The terms chilik and bilik, Rashi has a couple of pshatim, a couple of explanations, but we can just say they're arbitrary names of anybody. I don't know Joe, and I don't know Blo, so to speak. I have a tradition. I have a teaching that I know. Ano shmaitzi yadana. Diomar Rav Chiya bar Abba Rav Yochanan v'yami lo Amar Rav Abba bar Zavda Amar Rav Chanina v'yami lo Amar Rav Yankiv bar Idi Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Well, it's a lot of names we just read, but what's the point? Mishipui kova ulamato kshera. I have this tradition, ultimately quoted the name of Rav Yeshua ben Levi, that Shechita can take place completely above the Tabas HaGedola, can take place in the Kova, provided it's before the Kova starts to rise. The Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Mugremes de Rabbonon, that which is considered outside by the Rabbonon, Kshero, the Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, is considered within boundaries as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned. Ud Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, that which Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda would consider Mugremes, meaning outside the boundaries, Kshero, the Rabbi Hanino ben Antignus, that would be acceptable as far as Rabbi Hanino ben Antignus' opinion. We have a little arrow right here indicating Yud Ches Amud Beis, and it would be very helpful to find the corresponding arrow on Yud Ches Amud Beis, whereby you see Yud Ches Amud Aleph. And that you'll find at the upper part, five lines from the top of Yud Ches Amud Beis. We are referring back to that point right now. And here the Gemara says that this teaching of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi seems to be extraneous. When you just told me that Rabbi Hanina ben Antignus is more lenient than Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara says, Pshita, that appears to be obvious. In other words, we had a source back on Yud Ches, on Daf Yud Ches, where Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda was speaking, and Rabbi Hanina ben Antignus followed. So and he said that Mugremes is Kshera. So he's obviously being more lenient than Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, who preceded him. So the Gemara says, Mahu detema, one might have thought without Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus a derabbonon koi, that Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus is a comment on Rabbonon. Namely, that the Rabbanon who required the entire Shechita to be in the Tabas HaGedola, so Rabbi Hanino is saying, I don't require the entire Shechita to be in the Tabas HaGedola, as long as you have most in the Tabas HaGedola. Chomash Malon, this is what Rabbi Shuben Levi comes to tell me, that Rabbi Hanino ben Antignus was commenting actually on Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, and not on the Rabbanon. The Gemara asks, V'yema hochinami, maybe in fact Rabbi Hanina ben Antignus really is a reaction to the Rabbanon alone. The Gemara answers, Im Kain, if he were a reaction to the Rabbanon, he would have used the following expression, or the source would have said, Heid ole miboyale, being that the Rabbanon immediately preceded him, it would have been more accurate to say Heid Olei. However, he simply said Heid. Heid in a general form. He testified generally. Generally would then take into consideration even Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. And as such, he was being Mekil even more so than Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, who himself was more Mekil, more lenient than the Rabbanan. V'hilchasak Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus. The Gemara itself rules like Rabbi Chanina ben Antignus. Dekoi Rav Nachmon Kavosei. As we saw above, Rabbi Rav Nachmon, and here we have a little double star to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, a corresponding double star, second line from the top, where Rav Nachmon spoke. Since Rav Nachmon paskin or practiced like Rav Chanina ben Antignus, that's the way to go as far as this Gemara is concerned. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.